Do you want a beautiful lawn? Enter True Green, the easiest way to get a great lawn. Just water and mow, and they'll do the rest. Weed control, fertilization, aeration, and more. True Green is the official lawn care treatment provider of the PGA Tour, and they have a verified best price, which guarantees you the lowest price with no compromise on quality. You do you. Let True Green do your lawn care. Visit truegreen.com, TRUGREEN.com, to get the best lawn at the best price with the best people. Guaranteed.
And as a 20-year-old rookie, he is going to get it done. Jet Lawrence, the 450 National Motocross Champion.
This is, it's an unreal opportunity, man. I like Hunter said with his thing, with his championship, I haven't even dreamed of this because we never thought it was possible to be where we are today. And to do it like that with being undefeated so far, it's very emotional for me with all the hard times we've gone through, the hard work, and that whole time I was keeping it together and just pushing. Once I got that start, I felt good. I'm like, I'm not stopping this one. And as soon as I went over the finish line, the emotions came out.
Welcome to Title 24, presented by NBC Sports. I'm Ricky Carmichael, alongside my co-host, Ryan Villapoto. Before we get going, like always, got to thank United Motorsports, Quad Lock Case, and Boxall USA. Thank you very much. And man, those are some great words by the newly crowned rookie champ, 450 Pro Motocross Championship. But before we download about Unadilla, dude, how was your birthday yesterday? What, 35, right?
That's right. Yeah, so we got to a great birthday, low-key weekend. Actually, my mom got to take the boys for a couple days, and nice. We had no kids in the house. And then we did a little Duffy ride through the harbor yesterday. So yeah. Like I said, low-key, had fun, got to watch the race. It was an epic weekend.
Yeah, it was. That's good, dude. I love Duffy boats. So I've only been on them one time, but we cruised around Newport and had some beverages. It was a lot of fun. It's good.
It is good time.
Yeah, no doubt. I mean, what we all kind of expected. RV, Jack got it done. Pretty. I think this is one of his better races. Again, same scenario. I kind of talked about it, Stu and I, on the broadcast a little bit. Like the same. What we're watching right here, I believe this is when Jet takes the checkered flag on that last moto. You can see the emotion right there, just ecstatic. He's going to roll up to his manager, Lucas Myrtle, but there you go, celebrating. Boom, there he is, giving Mertz a huge hug. But you just go back and you think about, everything it took for his family to get to where he was, no secret. But going back to what I was saying, we've seen this scenario happen just about every moto that Chase has been there, where he's following Jet, and Jet just does his thing and comes out on top every time, dude.
Yeah, you know, he's riding really well, and I know we've talked about it, and multiple people have, of the journey that they've had as a family, coming from Australia to Europe here to the States. But that's hard. I mean, that just added, it's so hard to win a 450 race, let alone a championship, and then let alone on top of that, being undefeated at this point so far in the season. You know, there's no stopping the kid as of right now. His speed is better than everybody else. His strategy, his mental side of it, his smartness and quickness of thinking on the motorcycle is a step ahead of everybody currently. And, I know first moto there, we got to see some pretty close racing with Chase. But also it wasn't enough. Jet was still able to, put that behind him and just keep pushing forward and just inching away. I mean, right now I just don't see anybody beating him without a major mistake, to be honest.
Yeah. And then I think the sport in general, like, builds this narrative every single weekend that, we go to a race, like, oh my gosh, this guy's going to have a legit opportunity to beat Jet. Right. And so there's all this talk all week, all this buildup. And at the end of each race weekend, it's always the same. And I've gotten to a point like where I've kind of gotten tired of talking about it.
I know.
Right. It's just like, I'm to the point now. It's like, all right, dude, I'm just going to sit around and assume he's not going to get beat. And if it does, great. And just call it when it happens, right? Like, I just think we're making up stuff that isn't true, I think.
Yeah, no, it's tough, you know, because as a fan, yeah. as an X-racer, as a fan, you do want to see those tight knit battles and, you know, swapping of race wins and overalls and going to the next weekend, who's going to end up on top. And scenarios like that. But right now it's a bit of a reach for the rest of the guys. You know, there's, you know, as I was expecting, I know we had Justin Barsha back here at Unadilla. You know, I was hoping to see him back up front.
He got mangled though, too.
Yeah, with a first turn pile up, you know, something happened with the hydraulic clutch. So they ended up cutting that off. And then, as you know, Unadilla's, it's, if you're, I think he was two or three from the outside gate. For Moto 2, right? So really hard place to come from a recovery standpoint to be back up front. But yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. You know, I personally, I'd like to see another perfect season. There's only two of you guys out there. I think that's...
I would too.
That is so unbelievably hard to do at that level. You know, I've won a lot of races, but was never able to come close to doing a perfect season like that, you know? So regardless of who's in the class, who's not in the class, we've seen it time again this year, bike failures. I know the 450 class, they don't have too many bike failures, but we have bike failures, we have crashes, we have all these things that come into play, and to have that consistency and mental capacity to keep coming back the weekend is very impressive.
Yeah, I think too, what's been impressive to me, RV, is just how wind chase is all over him, you know, like he never cracks. And there's been several times that he could have been in that position on all styles of track. Go the beginning of the year, and then there's a couple of weeks where he was off, right? Then you go the Southwick, then you go to Millville, then you go to Washougal. Then this past weekend, it's basically outside of the deep mud, he's been in a pressure situation every single time and he hasn't caved. And I mean, you know how fast Chase is. So I don't know, man. I think he's done a great job. I don't put too much weight on only 22 motos versus when Stu and I did it, it was 24. I still think going undefeated, even though it's two motos less, I think is the same thing. I really do. Not a substantial change. And the odds are that he would probably go 24-0. So I don't think it's any lesser of him going any lesser than 24-0 rather than 22-0. I hope he does it. I think it's great. I think it's a great story and it's well deserved.
Mm-hmm. Totally.
Yeah. Actually, so one quick question about this, because I know there's been a lot of talk about this. It comes from N_J_P. So NJP. He says, Jet haters keep going to the argument that Jet only is only winning because there's no competition this season. He's racing and beating Sexton every weekend. Sexton is the only guy who could take it to Tomac and beat Tomac last season. Is Sexton genuinely that far off his 2022 pace? When Stewart went 24-0, he would win by over 30 seconds. Is that only because he had no competition? RC. Do you put Jet on the same level as you and Stu? If so, why? If not, why? Well, I think myself personally, that's a great question. I think he's certainly more talented than I was, without a doubt. I mean, he can do way more things on a motorcycle as far as skill level. You know, I was kind of more like a dog, and I would just bulldog it. And I worked hard, and that's how I was able to win. So I think he's better than me talent-wise for sure. I think he's really smart. I think he's a great learner. He could ride the edge when needed. He's calculated. I think he has the best of both worlds. I think, and this sounds really crappy, but I think in 2002 when I went my first undefeated season RVS, the competition was pretty light that year. It really was. 2004, there was a little more heat there. So I think I had less competition for sure. That's my thoughts. It's crazy to me. I think you could have gone 24-0. I think you worked harder than everyone else. I think you had the mental strength. I just think the way things worked out, but nevertheless, to answer NJP's, do you think he's winning because the competition is light? Why do you think he's winning?
I mean, I think he's winning because he's the best guy on the track right now. And I think to go back and it's that's always a tough question to answer. Is like, well, what about last year when Eli was at his prime before he got hurt and outdoors beat Chase, you know, and Chase was able to beat Eli and you know, it was a little bit of a closer race. Now, do I think I do think that Eli is the type of guy that would that could rise to the occasion or rise to that to the level of speed that that Jet is running.
Yeah.
I don't think, you know, like first moto going back watching Unadilla, right? Like Chase was able to start inching up on Jet and put himself in that position to where we watched both of them, you know, kind of hit each other a little bit in one of the turn. Nobody's real fault. Jet talked about it.
Yeah, the incident with Chase was kind of funny. We both came back and I'm like, I originally thought I was going to go on that second rut. And then I seen out of the corner of my eye that other rut and Chase obviously was coming in hot and that was his main line, I'm pretty sure. And I decided to switch it up. I'm like, oh, mate, that line looks better. So I just tried to switch it up and I didn't know he was there. Those bikes are always so hard to hear. So it wasn't really anyone's fault. I feel like it was just a bit of a bummer situation. But thankfully, we both stayed up.
Right here, coming into the right hander, going before you go back up the old hill where all the whoops were. Jet doubles. So Chase and Jet come together right there. Nobody's fault. They kind of came to one line. Jet said in the press conference it was no big deal. But so my point is Chase was able to inch up on to Jet. So if you put Eli out there, is it Jet and Eli and Chase is the third wheel? Or are all three of them involved? I personally think that if Eli was present in this outdoor season,
There's less gimmies for sure.
There's less gimmies. If I was a betting man, I wouldn't say 22-0 would happen if Eli was involved. I think Eli is a little bit better at pushing those limits, can ride out of his comfort zone better than Chase, and I think would be able to bridge that gap because Chase honestly isn't that far off, guys. He's no. Pretty close. It's little mistakes here. It's bad starts. It's Jet just creeping away. He can't bridge that gap. It's not like we're talking a huge, huge difference between the two. So I honestly think it might be a different scenario. Not that Jet wouldn't win the championship for this year's outdoors over Eli, but I think we'd have closer. We'd have some moto swaps for sure.
Yeah. And the reason I support RV and what you're saying 100%. And the reason that is, I believe, is because those little tip overs, and I say gimmies, is because you're not going to see that from Eli. If you're a betting man, I'm betting that he is going to be right in those moments where Chase would have an issue. Those are the moments you got to stick through and take it to the finish line if you want a legit shot of maybe knocking Jet off the, you know, off the undefeated chain or train. So that's why, and I agree with you 100%. If Eli was here, I think it would be tougher in that regard. Maybe not speed-wise, because I think I do think that Chase is faster than Eli sometimes, mm-hmm. most of the time actually. But it's just those little tip overs. Let's just say what happened this week in the first moto, you know, when he crashed in those ruts. I think it was right there, kind of by where they collided. A couple laps later, or no, actually, yep. that wasn't. But there you go. There's yep. where he went down. But everything is golden, right? He's right where he needs to be at a pivotal moment in the race. It's late in the race. You got lappers that can help you. Maybe a little fatigue is going on. You've been on his tail all race long, and those mistakes right there, I feel like, is where you won't see from Eli. And boom, he takes it down to the checker.
I agree. I do. I think, you know, watching that, and it's a bummer to say, like, it seems like it's always a front end issue, or he's always losing the front. And I don't, to me, I mean, he's gone through that turn 20 other times. And then the 21st time he comes through, and maybe he had to change his line. Cause I did hear that, he was talking about Lapper kind of maybe being in the preferred line, and came in there. To me, it looked like he came in just a little too hot. And you know, front wheel ended up somewhere where he didn't want to. Just, I mean, and we're talking with, you know, 3 inches one way right. or the other is a problem at that speed, right? Like, yeah. you know, people's like, oh, it doesn't look like, oh, what happened? Well, dude, if you're off by the smallest bit, like, throws your body positioning off, you lose the front, you weren't ready for it, or, you know, there's a thousand things that could happen, but I don't see that happening from Eli. I just think his race craft, he's a veteran and the guy still got the speed. So I think that, you know, looking back when Chase was able to bridge that gap, they hit each other. The right there was, in my eyes, a pivotal moment because you knew that you just caught him. You know, maybe it was a mistake from Jet, one or two corners or whatever throughout the lap, and that's why you made up that time. But you were able to inch up on him right there. That's when Jet goes on defense, you would think, right? Like totally. You'd be like, oh my dude, he's right there. Heart rate spikes a little bit. I got to make something happen. I got to pull back away. But Jet just stayed doing exactly what he was doing, didn't get excited. But if you watch, like, Chase wasn't able to regroup after that and bridge that gap again. He just bridged it before and then that happened and it was kind of over after that. So I think that's what Chase needs to, you know, really try to figure out is how to crack Jet.
I want to ask you a question and I asked James this, but so when Chase is, and this is, I would have done this and this is why I asked this. If you're getting like just hounded, right, by this dude and you can't break him. Is there ever a point where you would have just kind of like rolled off and let the dude pass?
Okay. So
I need to see what the hell he's doing.
I have a perfect story for that you bring that up. It was 2007. I was at PC. Ben Townley was at PC. Ben Townley had started working with Eldon and yourself.
Yeah.
And we raced, I mean, Pro Circuit only lost one moto that year to Josh Grant at Factory Connection. I think it was High Point Moto 1 or Moto 2. And we won every other, race wins and overalls and moto wins after, you know, from that point on. But Millville, we came out and me and Ben had raced so hard that entire year. That weekend, I couldn't figure out where he was faster than I was. So I actually picked tracks a little bit different, but kind of where Hunter went down and what pushed the front over before that single.
Yeah.
We would go up that way and there wasn't as much track as there is now over there. There was a couple horseshoes and that was about it. And it came to the one of the finish lines.
Uh-huh.
And I went wide and let Ben go by and then passed him back that same moto. But I had to figure out what he was doing because I felt like I was going as fast as I could go. Taking great lines and I couldn't break him. I couldn't pull away. So I put myself out there and was like, okay, I'm going all in. I'm going to go wide. I let him by and followed him and was able to pass him back and learn some things where he was going, where I wasn't going and things like that. So
I love that. And that's, dude, there were so many times when I would kind of roll out and let whether it was Reedy, and I just knew, like, dude, I couldn't pull away, and I felt like when he was behind me, I was riding more not nervous, but just riding out of my comfort zone. So I'm like, dude, I just need to let this guy go by. Maybe I'll learn something from him. And every time that I say that to Stu, he's like, dude, no way. And he's like, he can't let a guy like Chase get by him. And I'm like, I don't know about that. And then, like, to your point, it makes me feel a little bit better about my question because I did it several times. There was more than several bunch. And can you remember to a T, like when you let him by, like, were you like, oh crap, dude, no wonder I couldn't pull away. Cause he was was there a certain,
I remember when I let him by, like jumping in back behind him then he wasn't going that fast. And I don't know if I just had really bad lines or was maybe making the track too long, because I tended to do that a lot, is ride a lot of outsides, just taking up too much track and making the track longer than it should be. I just remember getting behind him and I was like, I could follow him very easily then, a little less pressure. He wasn't breathing down my neck now. And not to mention, what's going through, you know, Ben's mind, for example, or anybody else, if this were to happen to, or Reedy's mind, what's this guy doing out here on the outside? And he lets me by, and then jumps in behind it. He just gave me the race, but he's all over me again. Mm-hmm. Like, that's got to play mind games also inside of Ben's head or Reedy's, you know, like, what's this guy doing? You know, like, why is he letting me by, you know? So, but yeah, I thought it was, I think if Jet were to let Chase by, I think Jet can follow Chase. He'll learn and then he'll pass him back. That's what I would bet on.
Yeah, it's I would have done that. Like if I had radio communication, I would have told Jet like, hey dude, roll out, like see where this dude's a little bit better than you, or he's making up the time. Because I don't know, I just feel like we've seen this situation so many times, and it's like I feel like Chase is getting free learning lessons. I really do. I don't know. But I mean, not to say like the way you and I did it was
well, he's
right
not learning quick enough, Ricky.
What's that?
He's not learning quick enough.
No, he's not. He's not. But I feel like, you know, the way that Stu would be, I feel like, you know, there's nothing wrong with that either. He felt more comfortable leading the way, you know.
Like so. I don't know if I would ever challenge that to a situation with Dunge. And right. It's a 50-50 deal there, because I could look at on one hand and be like, if I were to do that to Dunge, I think I would mentally break him, because he'd be like, oh my gosh, what's happening? Like it would blow his world apart. Yeah. But then on the other hand, I look at it as like, that's a risky move, because if Dunge gets out front, I think he's going to be a hard guy to pass. He's going to run it down to the checkered flag. Fitness isn't going to be a problem. Dunge is very good at hitting the same line every single time, very consistent. You know, so now you have to work around somebody that's not a roadblock. I don't want to say roadblock, but somebody that isn't all, you know, moving around the track where you maybe leave the inside open, may go outside here, may do this, may do that. It was, he would stick to his program and stick to his lines for those 30 minute motos. And that's what also almost made it harder, because he didn't leave anything open. He didn't leave any carrot for you anywhere.
No. He's pretty polished for sure. One shout out, and I thought he rode excellent, especially the first moto. He had great pace. You know where I'm going with this is Dylan Ferrandis. He talked about it in the post-race press conference. Clearly, he looked comfortable. His lap times and the way he was riding, you know, complimented that. So Efrain _103, he asked, does Dylan's performance in Moto 1, he rode good in Moto 2, he came from behind, open the door for him to get a contract extension? What do you think?
I mean, I think,
that's crazy he's not signed.
Yeah, no, I mean, look, I think we got to go back and we got to look at Supercross. His Supercross season wasn't stellar at all. And we know that's where a lot of the eyes are, is Supercross, also outdoors. But yes, I think it does help him secure something, especially with these last three rounds. Like he's struggled for sure. It's a new motorcycle, but from what we saw at Unadilla, you know, we're watching the replay right here. Definitely had more speed. You got to think that putting himself up in that front and being able to run with those guys and kind of see what they were doing for a little bit of a little while is only if he can keep doing that these next three rounds. Is, as you know, Ricky, like if you haven't been up front and ran that pace in a while,
yeah,
like that's a big ask. You know, sometimes your arms get, you know, tightened up. Your breathing's not normal because you've been the last, you know, eight rounds you've been riding around in fifth, sixth, seventh, where, you know, and now the pace up front is substantially different, you know, so let alone working on the motorcycle, getting that better, putting himself in a good position and being able to run that, you know, if he can keep doing that these last three rounds, I think we see him get even better, because he'll get a little more comfortable up there. Heart rate won't be so high. It won't be so unfamiliar to him.
Yep. I agree. It's crazy to think though, like he doesn't have a ride, you know. I mean, he's been injured a lot. He's missed some Supercrosses, and we all know how important that is and how much emphasis is put on Supercross by all the teams, all the team managers. So there's a question mark there. The guy has the skill. He was so dominant in the 250s. He had a great 450 opener. You know, he won the championship. What was it, in 20, I believe, or 21, maybe? I can't remember, but he started out good. But I feel like, and you tell me if I'm wrong, I feel like sometimes guys that have had a lot of success and have done really well in the 250s, and then they make the jump to the 450 and they start riding the 450 machine, and it may not handle quite as good as the 250 did. And they have this expectation of, well, the bike needs to work this way because it did, like, you know, it worked this way through the whoops on the 250 or in the outdoors. Why doesn't it work like this, like my 250 did here? They have this expectation of the bike needs to work that way, and it's just not going to. Do you, I personally feel like he went through that especially after when he won his 450 Premier Championship, then after that, he could never get it right. I think he was looking for something perfect that wasn't there. Do you think that it was?
I agree with that. And I'll use Christian Craig as an example. Back when he was on Star Racing, I mean, literally, you didn't matter what set of whoops it was, didn't matter how big the run was, how big the whoops, how cupped out. He was phenomenal every time. Through every practice, every main event, every qualifier, he was the guy to beat in the whoops. So my point is, by bringing that up, is now he's on a Husqvarna 450,
right?
And he's still one of the better guys in the whoops, but you don't see that consistency like you used to. Say, okay, Christian Craig's gonna be the best in the whoops every single weekend on that Star Yamaha. It's a 250F. Now right. You go to the 450 class, different manufacturer, more weight, more horsepower. There's a lot of things that come into play. Yes, is he still one of the better guys in the whoops? I think he is, but you don't see, he's not a standout like he was in the lights class. And I think to your point is, in developing a new 452, like Star is with the new Yamaha,
mm-hmm.
I do think they look for the perfect thing. I do think they say, well, my 250F did this, but
right.
It's you got way more weight. There's way more, bigger motor, bigger piston, all that weight moving around. It's never going to be the same. And I think that's where you see the greats. That's where you can separate the greats from the guys that are really good is if you can make that transition, on the 450 and also run it through your entire career, not just, once or right. twice, get a couple wins and things like right. that, or even a championship, which, taking nothing away from Dylan, winning, like I've said before, to win a race in this 450 championship, just a race and overall, is a huge accomplishment, let alone a 450 championship, which he has.
Yes.
But developing a new motorcycle, getting that on online, Eli's out, so it's a one man band right now with the 450, things like, so I think there's a lot of things that coming into play for him for sure.
Yeah. We have actually some soundbite of Dylan talking about, the performance made with the bike and the changes and working hard. And keep in mind, I mean, we're way deep into the season. We're still working. And I feel like this has been an ongoing thing for Dylan, RV. It's just like, can't get comfortable, but in the meantime, your teammate has been absolutely crushing it. So to your point and to what I was saying, I just think at some point you have to admit, or not even admit, but just accept the fact that this bike is what it is. I need to learn how to ride it. And this is the best that it's going to be, or everything is a compromise. But roll this sound and listen to what he has to say.
I mean, it's the first day, it's the first race of the season where I was able to fight with the Honda boys, and I feel like myself. I feel like, I was back to my normal riding style, riding speed, and it feels good, because at some point I was like, maybe I'm over, maybe I don't know to ride the dirt bike anymore, and I was pretty sure, it was more bike setup more than anything, but after so many bad races, you start to question yourself, and we used this break after Washougal. We had a meeting with the team, and I really say that I was struggling with the bike, and I wanted to try some specific parts of the bike, and we did. They agree, and obviously I was right, and the bike is way better. The setup is way better, and it fit my riding style. It fit exactly what I was looking for a long time. So. I think prove myself that I still know to ride a dirt bike fast, and now with more confidence and more time on that new setup, maybe for the next two rounds, I can give a shot for the two boys next to me.
You think it'd be interesting to know what those parts are? I wonder if it's linkage, or I wonder if it's triple clamps. That's interesting.
Yeah, I mean, engine mounts kind of came into my head, and that'd be interesting. Like, he hasn't really specified what he's having issues with, is it the front of the motorcycle? Is it the rear of the motorcycle? I don't have nothing against Dylan, but also too, I think, from when he won his championship to today, I got to bring up riding styles a little bit, body positioning, and just technique side of it. Like, he reminds me of a, he's not as tall, but he reminds me of, he's got a Willemin style of a little bit of Willemin in him. You know, both French, you know, very similar riding styles, in my opinion. And now you see somebody like Jet and Chase where their form is just so perfect.
Yeah, more polished.
Does it take, is it going to take, or does it take Dylan more effort, you know, more energy, more, you know, to go that pace with his, with the, with his technique, you know, like if you look at Jet, I mean, he's just got perfect technique all the time, 9 times out of 10, same with Sexton. I'm not saying that, his riding style won't bring him up to the top step of the podium, because Ricky, let's be honest, yours wasn't awesome. Mine wasn't awesome. You know, I look at Kevin Windham having great riding style, Chad Reed having, you know, pretty good riding style. Now it's even evolved more. Like, we got a lot more Euro influence over here now with standing up a lot, riding the standing up all the way through the turns, and just different riding styles that I didn't do, and neither did you.
Right. Yeah. No. Heck no. Not even. And I think we both knew. We both knew it. We knew where our riding style worked, and we know where it didn't. So, you know, like, I think we both would, we would compensate or put more effort in the areas where maybe our riding style didn't work for us, and we focused on that area. So I don't know. Yeah, he definitely doesn't have the newer style. And to your point, yeah, I don't think that it will hinder him from getting there, but it's going to make it a little harder. Before we get to the 250 recap of Unadilla, let's thank some sponsors. United Motorsports. They got 6 locations between Ohio and Kentucky. Great company, great people. We talk about it every week. Come check them out. Check out unitedsports.com. Pardon me. Quadlock Case, quadlockcase.com. The Lawrence brothers are quadlock athletes. Great company, great product, a whole bunch of stuff, whether you need stuff for your adventure bikes, whether you need stuff for your mountain bikes. I got a couple mounts on my mountain bike and road bike. Works great. Of course, BoxoUSA.com. Oxo makes great tools. They were giving away a whole bunch of stuff and had a setup at Loretta Lynn's. Hopefully all the amateurs, people who tune into Title 24, got to see it in the flesh there. So we appreciate all you guys. Remember, there's a promo code Title24 for 10% off site-wide. Make sure you check that out. Save 10% on all your products site-wide, again, at unitedmotorsports.com, quadlockcase.com, and boxousa.com. Man, it was a bummer to see what happened to Hayden, and the bike torched his engine. I'm guessing, I haven't heard, but most likely.
Right here pushing, you know, just devastated. No, it's a tough spot to be in, man. You know, working, especially as a rookie, working, you know, working his tail off, putting himself in good positions, and then to see this happen, you know, like I've personally experienced this. I think right here at Unadilla, I put a hole in my radiator. Yep. I think it was the year with Ben. I think I had a hole in my radiator, and I didn't race one of the motos. But then vice versa, Ben had something happen later also. Mm-hmm. You know, so watching Deegan, you know, Hayden fall after the finish line here in the right hander, just a struggle weekend for him, you know, total bummer. But it's racing, you know. I mean, same thing happened. We had the same conversation after Southwick when Hunter's bike, you know.
Yeah, it's funny how everything kind of works out, you know. Not always do you get those points back, but you know, I would say 60% of the time, if you have a DNF, sometime your competitor has a few slip ups and you're able to make up at least half of those points. I feel like that happened to me couple times, like 97, I think. So I lost, I think I went into a High Point with a, I don't know, 27 point lead. I left with a 7 point lead. It was super muddy, and I got my butt handed to me. And then the next weekend we go to Pud's, and Sheik and Wyndham were in front of me, or no, right behind me. And Scott Sheik's chain fell off one moto, and then the second moto, K-Dub's bike blew up. So, I mean, you know, it's funny how it works out. And then you go back, and I just download, you know, of everything that's went down. Go back to, if you remember when Jay Coop went out, I mean, he didn't race that day at all. He's like 25 points back, 22, 25 points back, somewhere around that area right now. Mm-hmm. You have to assume that he was going to score at least 25 points that day. So you take that out. He's right there. And if Hunter doesn't have those two issues, you know, he gave up 50 points there. So it's kind of working back, except for Jay Coop. It hasn't come back around for him yet. But yeah, it's
yeah, interesting. I think it's I personally, that's what keeps the lights class very exciting. I feel like we haven't had, you know, it hasn't been this critical in the last, just in the last past few years, where you got a tight, you know, you got a point situation, big, you know, decent side points lead from Hunter, bike failure. Now we're within 8 points. Then we see a red, the red plate change, and now it's, we're tied. And now we have a, you know, Hayden's bike, you know, throw the towel in.
Yep.
So it kind of reminds me of back, like I was saying, back in 07, I lost a radiator there. Washougal, I think in 06, I blew a motor up while leading the points there. So it's an added, you know, it's something that is the 450 class doesn't have. We just don't have this, that added, you know, problems that could happen with the 450 just because the bikes don't break like the lights bike. So it's just it's another, as a racer, something you got to always think about, you know, it's interesting to see how it works. Like I like seeing it because it keeps it very interesting.
Yeah, I do too. I like it as well. It's a lot of back and forth. I don't know. We have two more races, Buds this weekend, and then Indiana. I don't know that we've seen the last of the chaos. I really don't. I have this feeling like because of, there's been so much drama and back and forth, and you know, I hope it's at no one's health expense. But I just, dude, it's been too crazy. It's going to be interesting to see what happens. And then you take a guy like, what do you think of like Levi Kitchen, dude? And he's from the Pacific Northwest, like yourself. Looks kind of like Kevin Windham when he rides.
Yep.
I love his style. What do you think a guy like that needs to do to back up those performances like he had in Moto One? He didn't get the credit that he deserves in Moto One because we were too busy talking about Hunter and Hayden for good reason. But dude, that guy was, he didn't even look like he was trying, bro.
Yeah, no, he was on the gas Moto One, you know, you've said that, I've said that before. Like Levi, I like watching Levi because reminds me of watching Kevin race and ride, and totally. Very similar styles, kind of light on the motorcycle, they do these little, you know, jump and bumps and little things that you know, are really cool and interesting to see. But I honestly, without really digging in to find out, cause I'm not, you know, I don't work with him, but need to figure out why he's inconsistent. What is it? Is it the mental side of it? And I mean, I know it's probably mental because when he shows up on, like he did at Moto One, you know, he's hard to beat. Like, you know, he ran away with that Moto One, but then all of a sudden, you know, you get first gate pick for Moto Two now because you just won the Moto One, and we don't see he can't back up that performance. So my question is why can't he back that performance up? You know, I don't think it's necessarily the work that he needs to, it's not like he needs to put more work in. Seems like all the star guys are fit. All the star guys are ready when they show up. So, what is it? I don't know what it is. He needs to figure out how to get more consistent because that's the only thing that's holding him back out of this championship fight.
Yeah.
Totally. He's got the speed. If he could be there every weekend, he would be the third or fourth guy in the mix of this championship with two rounds left.
Yeah. It'd be interesting. Cause I mean, for all, he's going to end up at PC next year. So it'll be interesting to see if he's able to, expand and do a little better on a different team. I don't know, maybe a different team, a different vibe will be good for them, and they'll fill in that gap perhaps. Who knows?
Yeah, you don't know. Going to a different team, they run the teams completely different, you know, completely different motorcycle. We know that platform is one of the best platforms that he's coming from, so that's going to be the interesting part to see.
Yeah, that'd be interesting, you know,
when he gets on the new motorcycle.
Yeah, same with dude, how about our guy Joe? He goes 3-3 and he's outside. No podium, no nothing. Joe rode good this weekend. It was good to see him do that. I I'm going to be hard on him straight up. I mean, I know he's had injuries, but I'm going to be hard on him. And he's one of my favorites out there, but he has underperformed this year. I don't know if there's an underlying problem that no one knows about. Maybe you know something that I don't, but I like the kid. He's fun to be around. I just feel I expected more from him this year.
I have said that in the past too. Like, Joe is definitely, needs to figure out. And that's another thing, I think, is that another mental thing is that something that he, that, what does he need to work on? I don't really know, but man, the guy's got the speed. He puts himself up there. When he does, he runs great motos. He's smooth. He's efficient. I don't know, mental side of it, I guess the mental game needs to get a little stronger. So he can show up every single weekend and put it up on the box, because that's what he's missing. He's got the speed.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see. I think he's going to HRC, I believe he is.
Yep.
So that'll be, I don't know. I think that'll be a good change for him. I do. Not that I think he's done really well. I loved how he earned that PC ride. I thought that was awesome. He did good. I feel like he rose to the occasion when he needed to. And I'm a fan of Joe. So I think he's going to do good at HRC, myself personally. When you were watching the first 250 moto, how Hunter kind of come up through the pack, right? He's passing these guys, and Hayden, like, he falls back a little bit, but then before his engine torches, dude, he starts coming back. I'm really bummed that his engine, you know, it expired, because that was interesting. I think we haven't talked about it much, but he was there, bro.
He was right. He wasn't far off of him. You could see him in the back of the camera there.
Yeah. I don't know. It would have been, I mean, it's hard to sit here and speculate, but he caught back up to him.
Yeah, that's an interesting spot to try to dissect, right? Because, you know, you got completely different riders in mentality standpoints. You know, Hunter a little bit older, more of a veteran. You have Hayden, the rookie, willing to send it, also on Unadilla, which there was only a few spots that were really, really, really ruddy where you really had to kind of pick and then point, mm-hmm. and shoot and hold it. You couldn't move around. But other than that, Unadilla kind of promotes some really good racing. And also, if you want to hang it out, that's your track to kind of be able to hang it out, because it's very wide.
Only thing though, like those areas this year, RV, like where you could normally hang it out, they were so ruddy. You know,
yeah, like where was it? It was where Barsha fell, I think.
Where Sexton fell, Faulkner, yep. fell there, and then that right-handed sweeper before you go way up the hill at the very, very top where you do a hairpin turn, come down. Yeah, like those guys, you just couldn't move around much.
Yeah, I mean, who knows? Like you said, we can sit here and speculate, but yeah. Man, it would have been a good race, put it that way.
I mean, I think Hayden caught back up to him.
I think Hayden would have hung it out, because honestly, being in that position, that was kind of a make or break position for Hayden. Mm-hmm. Hunter leading him. He needed to make that pass, also to make a statement. You know, we only have two rounds left.
Yep.
So it was kind of like, I guess he could have sat there and rode around right behind him. But obviously we know Hayden. We know that that's not probably his mentality. His mentality is to get to the front and go and make a statement, you know, for Hunter, but mm-hmm. didn't happen that the rookie came out. Well, I guess the bike broke. So
yeah, the bike broke. It broke. I was just like, I wish that wouldn't happen. It would have been fun to see how it played out, but that's why we race. The last few weeks, we all know there's been a lot of trash talk. Hayden's been, putting the pressure on. And before the race, like the press conferences on press day, they had asked Hunter what he thought about it. Hunter was like, oh, you know, I know that his dad's really telling him what to say and he's saying it, but it doesn't work on me, you know, unless I bite on it. And then, you know, he says it wasn't bothering him, Hunter. And then on the podium, he said,
but ultimately, big picture, we're talking about 22 points here now in the championship. How does that sound?
I mean, it sucks. I was looking forward to it. You know, everyone was talking about the pressure this, the pressure that. That's not pressure. I choose to do this. Pressure's when my family couldn't eat. So this is fun and it's what I love to do. So I was looking forward to the challenge.
Oh, dude. I mean,
you know what? I like what he said. And look, everybody, to your point, Ricky, you said this multiple times. Like we're trying to make stuff up, and the fans are like, oh, Hayden's saying this, and this Hunter's saying that, and then she walks straight up to her and or straight up to him, and it's like, so there's lots of talk about pressure. So she rolled the carpet out for him to say a very good answer, I think. You know,
yeah, that was a great question.
I think it was a little bit of a smart ass answer. you know, because there's been a lot of that talk. Well, what's it going to take? What's it going to take?
And he's been quiet. He's been quiet about it.
He's been quiet about it. And after a day like that, and even he said, he goes 22 point lead and he goes, oh, it sucks.
Yeah.
Why? And that shows that, you know, I think, you know, ultimately I can tell you what I would have probably done. I would have been like, it's a bummer. I wouldn't have said it sucks because, you know, I'm looking at it from like, okay, now I can take a breather where you could see it right on Hunter's face. He's like, no, let's bring this thing down to the end. Let's like pressure. Like I, you know, like yeah. He can say all he wants to say, and I'm going to show up every weekend and give it 100% and may the best man win. You know, I think that's what I liked about that statement is a little bit of a smart ass statement. Ended up on top. Some bike issues for Hayden.
Yeah.
That's what happens. I've had mine in the past, but let's keep on going.
Dude, if I'm Hayden Deegan, this is my approach. I am coming out and I try to go win the last four races, right? And just to give everyone a taste of like, all right, if my bike didn't explode, this is what was going to happen, right? That's how you handle the business.
That's your best finish. Yeah. That's your best finish for coming from Hayden. Yeah. Is to make a major statement on these last two rounds, these last four motos. And that way everybody would go back to the drawing board with their thinking cap on and be like, geez, what would have happened?
Yeah. So this leads me into, because that DNF forced him from Moto 2 to start outside, very outside. I think he's what, 2 from the end or something like that.
Yeah,
so it's almost impossible, RV, at that place to get a start from the outside for anywhere for that matter against so many great guys in a stacked class. But Austin Justice, number one, you're going to win the quad lock question of the week. And the reason it is because I want to get RV's take on this. It is, he asked, should a mechanical DNF that ruins Moto 1 also ruin Moto 2 with a terrible gate pick? What is your outlook? What do you think nowadays on the other side of racing? How do you think?
I mean, I think as a, yes, I think his balloon was probably popped, you know, it was definitely deflated after Moto 1 and having a mechanical, you know, mm-hmm. It's one thing to make a mistake on your own, but then to have the bike go out, which is, you know, it's not like they were trying. That's just what happened. It's racing. So being that the way Unadilla is in the start, it's a right-hander, number one, you know, mm-hmm. You really, if you don't get the mate, if you do not have a control of the first turn, because a lot of guys can, you know, a lot of guys blow the first turn at Unadilla and they get off the track when they leave the entire inside open.
Deegan went off track.
Yeah, it's from the outside. There's pretty much zero chance at Unadilla that it's like Bud's Creek also. Like it's pretty much out of the question of getting a hole shot. I don't care what motorcycle you're on and how fast it is, you know, because it's just so far. And I didn't see where Hayden came out first lap.
He was way,
you know,
back there.
Position wise, but you know, and then once you get that start, you make it through the first turn or first lap or whatever, and it's just, it's probably a very steep hill to climb in that position. Okay, Moto 1 doing great, bike blows up or, you know, goes out. Moto 2, now I'm on the outside, now I'm sitting 15th, now I got to work my way forward. Things weren't probably jiving like he would have liked them to. It was probably a tough race for him.
But I'm thinking what Austin Justice is asking, like, do you think that his DNF warranted a bad gate pick? Like, should he have gotten a gate pick where he originally qualified?
Oh, you know what?
What do you think they should change that rule to where you're second pick for the second moto is still how
you know what them. It's why we changing a rule that's always worked for the last 40 years, you know,
it's like Loretta's, bro. No one wants to pull spoons anymore.
I agree with spoons, but as a you know, pro motocross, we know that your gate picks based off your moto, first moto finish, and that comes down to, you know, if that was, I'm not saying it was or wasn't, whatever his it was, the bike had a failure and it put him in that position. So as a whole, as a rider, as a team, as it, I don't
want you're to, saying no, the hell with it.
I'm saying no.
There you go. I love it.
I'm saying no.
Hot take.
Keep it old school.
Hot take by Ryan Villopoto. Just nope, we ain't changing your bike DNFs. Sorry, bud.
Yeah, hey, I mean,
Hunter had to deal with it 2 times.
Yep, I've had to deal with it.
And like we all have. I had to deal with it. I got lucky. My bike blew up at Southwick. The only DNF I ever had. My bike blew up the second moto. So then I got lucky on that one. But
yep. I would leave it.
You go.
Yeah, leave it.
Leave it. Denny Stevenson isn't gonna be happy with you. He thinks Debo thinks the rule needs to be changed. So I don't know. I'm the same with you. I agree with it. It's not
work on the red work sure. on the red cross flag better before we start going after the stuff that really
that's right. I agree with you. It's like, and even with the silly spoons at Loretta's, dude, it's tradition. It's been that way all the time. I know it's not ideal. I get that. I understand the sacrifice that the parents make. Your parents did it, RV. My parents did it to get us where we need to go. It's just, you know that. If you don't like it, don't go to it.
Yeah.
I know it's harsh, but that's the way it is. So Austin Justice, slide into the DM. You'll get some quad lock stuff. You're going to love it. I promise you that. Go in there. I don't know what all they're going to give you, but we'll get you the details and send you over there. That was a good question. It was a hot take by RV. I love your honesty, bud. That's good. Yep. Keep it the same damn way, right?
It's simple.
I love it. Motorsports on NBC this week. You know what to do right there. Thursday, 2 p.m. SMX Insider with Wygant and Jason Thomas. It's always a good one. Saturday, Race Day Live. It begins at 10 a.m. Eastern, 2:50 and 4:50 qualifying. That's on Peacock. You can see it live, 1 p.m. Eastern. The races start, and that's going to be on Peacock all day long. You can stream it 3 p.m. Eastern time. The Xfinity Series is at Watkins Glen. Make sure you tune into that. That's going to be on USA. Make sure on Sunday you check out MotoGP, the Austrian GP. It's going to be epic, a lot of fun, great battles going on. Amazing last lap pass in England 2 weeks ago, so can't wait to watch that. That's on CNBC. That's always good. And then the Cup Series is at Watkins Glen, and it's coming down to the wire. I watched Indy Road Course yesterday. Michael McDowell, not on one of the popular teams. He gets the dub. It was really fun. And Chase Elliott, he's on the outside looking in for the championship, or the playoffs, I should say. So they got 2 more races, I believe, until the playoffs start. It's this weekend in Watkins Glen. Chase Elliott's always done well there, I believe. And then Daytona. So and then Daytona, anything can happen there. We all know that. And I'm still batting around. I might try to go over there and check that race out. Maybe NBC will get me on there. I can do some work there. But
that's right.
There's some good stuff on NBC. Make sure you guys tune in. Moving ahead to Bud's Creek. What's your favorite Bud's Creek story?
Oh, it's got to be MXON for me.
Yeah. Yeah. You
2007.
Look at this. This is some footage.
Old school.
Look at you there, bud. You so my teammate at the time, and now co-host. There I am, kind of just limping it on through there. My man RV carried the team that day. Red Dog and I, we did what we had to do, but it was for me. I had my excuses. I was battling. So this is a story I wanted to tell with this, and then you tell your story. I came into that race. It was my last professional race. I brought the kids, the family, everything. And earlier that year, I started not feeling well. And I remember when I first started, look at that, there's nothing better than standing on the podium. We're watching some film from that race of us on the podium, Team USA. Roger is hoisting up the trophy. But I started not feeling well, like June, July, more the beginning of the July. And where I really noticed, I'm like, okay, something's up, was at Red Bud. Stu and I were racing, and I'm like, okay, I'm going to wait and, you know, wait till the end of the moto. I'll be good in a good spot. And I started getting tired. I'm like, that's weird, because I never got tired. And then the second moto, same thing. So come to find out, a couple weeks go by. I didn't have to race again, a motocross race until Millville. So I had a few weeks, and I went and got some blood work done. And it was found out that I had full blown Epstein-Barr virus, EBV. So I knew that I only had three more races. So I had Millville, I had X Games, and then of course the Nations. And I was supposed to do the US Open after the Nations. And I couldn't do that because I was sick. But that race, I was so bummed, because I knew it was my last pro race, big race. And it was, of course, the Motocross of Nations. You were on fire. It was a great year for me up until I got sick. And I just knew that we had a good team and an opportunity to race the Motocross of Nations in your home country. And I knew that it was going to be my last shot. And I always wanted to win a Motocross of Nations in our home country. And yeah, I knew it was going to be, I knew I was sick, but I thought that I could limp through. And when I got there, I flew there. I think I got there Friday. And then Saturday morning, I got up to do a little spin in the motorhome. Mm-hmm. And dude, like, I'm just spinning and my heart rate's like 130, 135, just a little warm up like Eldon Usavis do. And I'm like,
yeah,
135 felt like I was like at 160. I'm like, man, I said, this is bad. So anyhow, we go through Saturday. And I kind of cooked myself a little bit there, because of EBV. And then Sunday, I tried to play it as cool as possible. And I was basically on life support. I got bad starts. I gave you the inside on one moto, and I gave Red the inside, I believe, on the other moto. And I felt like, kind of being the team captain, that's what you got to do, especially for the 250 guys. I knew that if you could get out there, I wanted you to have that inside gate. I knew that, and the same for Red. And I feel like all the guys that are coming up for the Motocross of Nations, if you're the team captain and you have the advantage, you give the other guys the preferred gate. You take it. You take it on. You fall on the sword for that. That's what you do.
Yep. Yep.
So, dude, you freaking riz to the occasion. It was epic. I'm sorry I couldn't enjoy it more with you after the podium. And we went to, I think we did the press conference, and then I went back to my motorhome and I laid down. Dude, I fell asleep for an hour and a half. My mom comes back there. She's like trying to wake me up. But you think about that, and everything that race was for me is my last pro race. I had my family there. We won Motocross of Nations. You crushed it. It was so much to celebrate. I mean, beverages going everywhere. And dude, I didn't even have the strength to enjoy the night with you guys. But I appreciate you. And Red, you absolutely crushed it, dude. Did you just feel like you were on another level that day?
Yeah, no, honestly.
Tell us your story.
That was an amazing weekend. I mean, Bud's Creek was wall to wall, you know, people. And with the three of us, like, I knew, like you said, going in, knew we had a good team, gave me the inside gate because of the 250, also give it, you know, Red Dog the inside gate because Red Dog wasn't the best starter, mm-hmm. You know, but good racer. So it couldn't have had a better team. But like, for me, I mean, honestly, like, if I,
yeah, tell us about like, what, like, when you were coming into that, I know you're happy and all that, but like, what was your realistic goal? Like, what were you, did you come in there? And I've always wanted to ask you this. Did you come in there and be like, dude, I want to crush these dudes. I want to
honestly
win.
So we just got done racing outdoors, and that was an outdoor series, and mm-hmm. mom and dad went home, back to Washington for, I think, like a week or something. So uh-huh. me and some of the boys had the house for free, or, you know, for, alone, you know, so we did stupid things for about a week. And my dad comes back home, and my good friend Brandon Fulton was there with us. And he goes, he tells a story so great. My dad shows up and he goes, "What do you think Caroli's doing?" and I turn around and I said something super smart ass to him and he walked away. So I went out and rode one day before that up at a place called Nuevo in the middle of the desert.
That's it, dude.
Yeah. Yeah. So I took like a week off and then rode one day and came back, you know, cause we had just been, you know, really busting our butt all like everybody does, but towards the end of the season. So that 1 week off was like a huge deal. I felt like so much, I almost felt faster when I came back and I got 1 day or 2 days of riding in and then we flew there. But honestly, everything was in slow-mo. It was literally like the Matrix. If I had to put it, other than when one of the guys fell and I got hung up on his bike, other than that, really nothing could have gone wrong. Everything went, nothing could have gone wrong. And it's hard to say that, you know what I mean? But there's like everything I could just, I'm going to go here. I'm going to pass this guy right here. This is how I'm going to do that. Like you could, everything was just playing itself out right in front of you and you could make those decisions and speed too.
When it's meant to be, it's meant to be, dude.
Exactly. Like speed. It wasn't hard. I didn't get tired. I didn't get hot. It was
like, your bike awesome too? Like working perfect.
Bike was just working perfect. Like I really couldn't do anything wrong that day. And it was a bummer because BT had gotten hurt that morning too in practice or on Saturday, he hurt his shoulder. So he couldn't race, but that was the only guy we were missing from, you know, kind of the US side, you know, training with you and on my team. And we raced so hard together, you know, racing against Crowley and the rest of the guys.
It was hot that day, by the way.
It was hot. No, it was hot, but I just can't, looking back on it, there's actually a good movie called, I think it's called 60 Years in a Day. And it's based on, I think Troy Adamidas did it. It's based on 07 MXON.
Really?
Yeah. 60 Years in a Day, I think is what it's called. And it's really good. It's like an hour long. But no, that's a highlight. The highlight or one of the highlights of my career.
Yeah, it's any time. So the people watching or listening to Title 24 and have never been to MXON, it's a special race, especially if it's in your home country. I only got to experience it one time racing, actually competing. And I was at Bud's Creek in 2007. What we're telling you our stories about. It's so special. It's like trying to explain Vegas to someone. You just, the vibe there is just unreal. The pride of the fans. It's not an event that fans go to drink beer and don't give a crap about racing. They go there because they are supporting their country. It is just, it's epic. And if anyone has the means to make it to any motocross of nations, the ones in Europe are great. Also, I strongly suggest that you make it over there. So that was a good story.
It's one of my favorite races. To be honest, I loved racing at Bud's Creek because it was here on our home soil, and that's the only time I've gotten to race MXON here on our soil. But I've also gone three other times, and I think a few times with you also. You know, other places in Europe, for example. And personally, I love going to race them in Europe. They have the upper hand, obviously, because we're on their soil. But as as an American going, you get to go see all the history, all the, you know, just how they run their program over there. It's the first time you do it. I was 17 when the first time I did it. And God, I felt like a fish out of water when you got
there. Where were we? No, I didn't. That's when I got hurt, dude.
Oh, and Ivan stepped in.
I was so bummed. That was for Farley Castle, right?
No, Donington. Donington? It was Donington or the other one. It was two of them. I did two of them in England, one France, one.
No one, Farley. It wasn't. It was. Come on. What was that stinking place?
I don't know. But
it was south. It was south, right? South of London. I can't remember.
But it was. Yeah, Ivan stepped in for you. But it was my very first one, and I'm a 17-year-old kid going to Europe, and I'd only been to Europe one other time for this same race, but on an 80.
Oh, really? You did the mini MX?
Yeah, the junior World Cup. Yep.
Junior.
And
Where was that at?
I raced Porcel in that one too, actually. Yeah, it was I forget. It was in Italy somewhere. I'd never been to Europe. I was like 13 years old, and we go there and tracks in the middle of this, you know how they build the tracks in the most weird spots in Europe, and partly because they've been there for like 100 years, you know, like they just said, we're going to put one right there. And it's still stuck around. And this one was just outside of a little town. And we got to go over there, but it was just I really enjoy going to Europe just because it's a lot of fun. Get to see a lot of people and major hardcore fan motorcycle fans.
Yeah, it is. It's a vibe like no other.
Matterly Basin.
That's it. Yeah. I was so bummed. So I got hurt at the last national. Remember, I fell, I think it was the first moto, and I jacked
knee,
up.
Right?
Yeah, on my shoulder.
Oh, okay.
And I just nicked my labrum, and I had to sit out. I wanted to do it, but I tried riding the day before we went over there. And just like, if I got like deep braking bumps, I was like, nope, I didn't want to tear it completely and then have to have reconstructive surgery, because I knew that I only had another year going. I'm like, dude, I don't want to go through that rigmarole. But you guys ended up doing really well that day.
It was a close one. Yeah, no, we ended up winning it, but it was close, man. It was, I think Stu fell in one of the motos and kind of like, I think hit his head a little bit, had his trouble starting the bike.
Remember him and Everts got into it. Like Stu and I wasn't really riding hard or something. Maybe I don't want to put words in his mouth, but
there was a little, cause that was Stefan's very last race.
That's right.
There at Matterly, I believe he was done. He retired after Matterly Basin in 06. So, that was cool to see. I got to race with him too.
Yeah. Well, we hope you guys like the story. RV definitely carried the team in 2007. I'm glad that it was a special for you. I wish I could have enjoyed it more. I loved winning. I thought it was awesome. We got the job done, but had you not put in that excellent ride and to do that and to act absolutely wax dudes on your 250, that's hard to do, people. It's really hard to do because of the rules and how you have to run the FIM specs. I feel like it really penalizes the 250s. So to do that, great job, bud. Proud of you.
Thanks, buddy.
Yeah.
No, man. It was a good one.
It's on the YouTubes. Go watch it, but only watch it after you've watched Title 24. You can watch it Motorsports on NBC's YouTube page. You can always watch it on demand at Peacock. It's on Peacock all the time. You can watch previous episodes as well. And remember, we're on Amazon Music. Head over to amazon.com/NBC Sports to get all the Peacock shows if you want. And always remember to like, comment. We'll keep sending those questions. They are awesome. Before we say goodbye, we need to ask you guys, send us over who your perfect MXON team would be this season. I don't want to say anything. RV, I don't know if you want to say anything about it. I think we should let our fans see who they would pick. What do you think?
I think let's let you guys pick. Send us over, a couple three-man teams that you think, and then we can dissect it and see where we go from there. And
we can
how off the wall you guys are or how correct you guys are.
We can bash some of our haters like they get on us, right?
That's right.
We will applaud our true fans that watch Title 24. So thank you guys very much. United Motorsports, Quad Lock Case, and Boxo, you guys are great partners. Everyone, again, thank you for listening and watching, and we'll see you next week.